Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody. This is Janine, and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk Radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media project. You can join our team at www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. Speaking of volunteering, the Internet Infrastructure Work Group, that's our name for our tech team, could use some help as we gear up for future actions. We've got a lot of things planned here at Coffee Party, and we need some web work and other kinds of technology to help us launch. If you're interested, if you'd like to dabble your toe in the waters of activism behind the scenes, then also go to www.coffeepartyusa.com, volunteer, and let them know you're interested in being on the tech team. And I will probably personally give you a call or send you an email. So thanks so much. So Debbie Lynn is away on business today. And so please join me in welcoming back our guest host, Ann Walker. She's a professional woman from Texas and an activist for women's rights and a darn nice person. Welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. This is going to be a great show today.
Well, I have so too. Go ahead.
So why don't you kick it off?
All right. I'll get her started, and you can carry water with me.
Okay.
our topic today is formally titled Shareholder Religion v. Employee Religion. And that's my personal assessment of the case heard Tuesday by the Supreme Court, Sebelius v. Hobby Lobby. The question, can there be exceptions to the law, exemptions from the law, based on the religious belief of shareholders, specifically exemptions of birth control methods not in favor by the plaintiffs? I've been posting about this for several days, and one of the things I see is people jangling up corporate person and real people, humanizing these corporations that are in the business of complying with the law of the land. So to me, the question is really, does the corporate person have religious rights? Would we even be hearing this case if Citizens United hadn't, you know, injected steroids into the whole notion of corporate personhood, you know, which used to mean you're not a real person, but you can have a checking account. You're not a real person, but you can hire employees. You're not a real person, so you can buy insurance. You're not a real person, so you can sign a contract. That's what corporate personhood used to mean. And now it's getting very up close and personal. So I heard you start to talk twice, Ann. Go for it.
Well, and you know, the thing that I have found over and over again, and I am a Christian. I'm going to come out right in the very beginning and say that. However, I do believe birth control is a necessary part of women's health care. So when a company says to me, I'm not going to cover certain types of birth control for you based on my religious beliefs, I have many questions go through my head. First off, well, what religious belief might that be? Even if you are a Christian company, which Hobby Lobby kind of sells itself as, even if you are a Christian company, I'm a Christian. 99% of most Christian women have used birth control. So what part of that doesn't mesh with your religion? That's the first part. The second part is, if I weren't Christian, if I were Jewish, if I were atheist, if I were Muslim, this is a very slippery slope for me. When employers can feel like they can start cherry-picking how the law applies to them based on their faith system, you have this propensity to then make sure that there are to then cause certain women or people or whoever you're discriminating against to not have access to the things that they need simply because of your faith. If somebody had written in one of these comments, if I'm Jewish, can I demand, if I'm a Jewish company, can I demand that pork not be served in the hospitals that are on my plan? And I think that's a very valid point. So I see this as a very slippery slope. We can say that it's only a handful of birth control methods, IUD, Plan B, Ella. But the bottom line is that's not the employer's choice to decide what kind of health care a woman should receive. That's between her and her doctor, not between her and her employer.
Well, if I can interrupt for a second, you know, I'm actually surprised that we're hearing this case at all. I'm going to give my two cents of constitutional and legal interpretation, and then I'm going to open the mic of our local constitutional scholar. But let me just open with this. You know, Justice Kagan actually used the words that Justice Scalia used in 1990 in the Employment Division versus Smith case. And anyone who's been reading into this whole Hobby Lobby thing has read this case. Justices are not qualified to evaluate the centrality of beliefs to a faith or the validity of interpretations brought forth by individuals seeking exemptions from the law. You know, so this is, he really said, how could he possibly judge how important this particular part of your religion is to you, right?
Right.
Now, I believe the Smith case was from Oregon, where I am now, and it had to do with Native Americans and peyote. Basically, they were terminated for peyote. If it's not the Smith case, it was one just like it. Anyway, and so there was actually a very negative reaction to this, what I think is a very interesting interpretation. And so Congress passed in 1993 the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Reminds me of Clear Skies Initiative. You know, you always wonder what they really mean by the title, which sets strict scrutiny standards for any law that substantially burdens a person's exercise of religion, while Scalia appears to think the act bodes well for Hobby Lobby, you know, that the act actually saves him from his previous words. I assert it points to the question, whose religion? Hence the name of this show, shareholder religion or employee religion, because somewhere here, some darn buddy's religion is going to be unhappy, I'm going to put it that way. So with that, I want to open area code 641. I believe this is Bob Woodburn. Bob, is this
you? Yeah, it is.
Oh,
hi, Bob.
That would be me.
Happy to have you here today.
Hi, Ann. Hi, Janine. Nice to meet you, Ann.
Nice to meet you, too. So what is your take on this?
Well, this is one of those cases that is so easy to look at on the surface and come to a knee-jerk conclusion. But when you look at it from a legal and enduring standpoint, the complexity of it is immense. Because I think Janine is absolutely right that, bottom line, somebody's religious beliefs are going to get stepped on, or somebody's personal liberty is going to get stepped on. Now, I understand the argument that Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood may not want to pay for these particular birth control services, okay? But they always have the option to find another carrier. They are not bound to go with the savings of the ACA. That's
so
number
one. What you're saying is then Hobby Lobby or Conestoga could choose a different insurance carrier for their employees.
That's correct.
That might not have any of this covered. Is that what your take is?
Well, my take is that with one small caveat here. The ACA does provide that carriers must have certain minimum coverages.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And
now,
birth control is one of them.
Right. And so there probably is not a plan in the country that does not have that coverage, because if it does, it's acting in discord with the ACA.
So, in other words, it doesn't matter what carrier Conestoga or Hobby Lobby choose to use, the law of
right.
the land requires that birth control is part of the coverage under all the plans that are compliant with ACA.
Right.
And ACA did not, and the law did not state what types of birth control. Because remember, what they're protesting or what they're trying to prevent women having access to are IUDs, Plan B, and Ella. And I
right.
think Conestoga
Anything.
Is okay with IUDs. They just don't want the Plan B and the Ella.
Right. And the difficulty there is the same one that was present in Roe versus Wade, okay? And you're going to get just as big a fight over it. And the conflict between the moments prior to conception, the moments after conception, and the moment prior to pregnancy prior to birth are the commonalities between all three cases, Roe, Conestoga, and Hobby Lobby.
Well, but see, here's where I have an issue, because Hobby Lobby and Conestoga, their take is that Plan B, Ella, and IUDs prevent a fertilized egg, which for them that is a viable life, prevent a fertilized
right.
egg from being implanted, when in fact that's junk science. That's not true. Plan B and Ella prevent the release of the egg should the egg have not been released yet, and then they also prevent fertilization, and an IUD also prevents fertilization. So those types of birth control, and this is their argument, you know, go against their fundamental religious rights because to them it is equivalent to abortion, when in fact those types of birth control do no such thing. They prevent fertilization from happening to begin with, which I was talking to Janine before we got on. That is the central issue that I have, because they're picking and choosing what they think goes against their religion when in fact it really does not go against their religion.
Well,
Well, and it's dated,
the court has to decide
info.
What the court may have to decide that issue as a crux issue as well.
Well,
in other words,
you know, I didn't
if
see
they
any
do
of
not
the...
have a valid case or controversy, that destroys jurisdiction right there.
Well, and here's
exactly.
why I have been flabbergasted that it's even gotten to the Supreme Court, knowing that these types of birth control are not preventing implantation of a fertilized egg. That's not what they're doing. They work just like the other types of birth control work. So how it has gotten to the Supreme Court, and nowhere in the arguments that I read did anybody bring this
point. It got to the Supreme Court on a very simple basis. One of the ways that the Supreme Court uses to determine which cases it will take is circuit splits. And
is what?
The circuit splits.
Gotcha.
In other words, whether the lower appellate courts are in harmony or not on the issue. If they are not in harmony, and there have been several cases of the type, then the Supreme Court steps in and says, look, we can't have 12 different regional laws here. When we're discussing federal law, we're going to take
right.
this case and settle the matter.
I see. So, and correct me if I'm wrong on this. Isn't it correct that Conestoga, theirs was knocked down in a lower court, but Hobby Lobby's was not? I think they had different outcomes prior to getting to the Supreme Court.
Of that, I'm not sure. And,
okay.
And
okay.
I'd like to remind all listeners, I'm not an attorney. I am merely a student of the Constitution.
Right. So, go ahead, Janine.
Oh, well, you know, I was just going to say, all of this really points to, and hopefully the court will see, that the whole notion of the court having to that the court is not qualified to evaluate the centrality of beliefs to a faith or the validity of interpretations brought forth by individuals seeking exemptions from the law. The 1990 position in Smith is really germane here. My education is in public health. I had extensive human biology, anatomy, all of that. And I promise you that in 1970, maybe around the time of Vatican II or whatever, the belief about how birth control worked was at a particular level. There were certain accepted norms. And what we know today, given the science of today, is that many of the things that we believed back then about how these birth control methods work is not true. And I'm afraid that some of the, you know, it's just got typed into the missile somewhere, and then it's just become an assumption of practice or an assumption of incorporated into this faith as an interpretation. So it would be very unfortunate if the Supreme Court got its feet wet interpreting the validity of the science behind the beliefs that yes. many people have had for over 40 years. But that's actually what they're asking, in a way, us to do. And,
I think
the Scalia position was brilliant in 1990.
Well, what I find is interesting is that we're asking our court system to validate or not validate the science behind birth control. And never in my wildest dreams would I ever have thought that a court system would need to validate scientific process. And, you know, this is precisely why Galileo was almost excommunicated from the Catholic Church. He had a scientific idea that the sun did not revolve around the earth, but the earth revolved around the sun. That went against everything, you know, within the Catholic Church system, which was really the law of the land at the time. And he was almost excommunicated. He had to take that back. And I feel like we are, again, in the dark ages where we're asking our court systems, like you said, Janine, to validate a scientific fact seems ridiculous to me.
Right. And
I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
It's not a tenet of faith. It's not a tenet of faith. It is a fact that was interpreted in the 1970s and just became
right.
a part of the, you know, it got into hard copy. You know what I mean? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Let's get somebody else.
We just have another guest with her hand up. I think this is Kathleen. I'm going to bring Kathleen in. I'm going to try four mics open because her hand came up at a particular time. So I'm thinking, is this Kathleen?
Hello, it is Janine.
Well,
how you doing?
Lunch with Loudon.
Thank you. Hi, Deb. And hi, Bob. Good to hear you again, Bob. I enjoyed Press One. What a good information. Wonderful. I always look forward to your calls. I learn so much.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Kathleen.
I guess I have more of a question for you ladies. Not so much an I have an opinion, but I don't differ from you, so it won't make the conversation any more interesting. But do you think sex plays an issue? If this were a man looking to get a vasectomy, say?
Oh, absolutely.
Would things be, you know, if it was a man that was, you know, Hobby Lobby was trying to, you know, force a man not to get a vasectomy, would we still be in the same place?
No, we wouldn't. And here's some very, this is very anecdotal on my side, but I can speak from personal experience. In the 90s, I was on birth control, and that was not covered under my employer's plan at the time. Fast forward to now, and I'm postmenopausal, I'm just going to say it, I went and tried to get a prescription from my regular doctor for medication for a postmenopausal woman, and he said I needed to go to my OBGYN. So I had to make a second appointment. And if you've ever sat in an OBGYN office with women having babies, you know you wait all day.
Yeah.
So then my husband, I asked my caretaker, I said, so my husband, if he wanted to get Viagra or Cialis, does he have to go to a urologist then? And they said, oh, no, he can just come in here.
Okay.
So And we all know that whatever research, most medical research is done for men. Very little medical research is done specifically for women. And we all know that if a man decided, like you said, to no longer procreate, that he wanted a vasectomy, doesn't that go against the Catholic faith? Yet they're willing to cover that for him. And
yes.
I just don't understand. And it is about not only sex, like as in gender, but also there's been a lot of, I would call it slut-shaming in the process, where
mm-hmm.
people will say things like, well, if you're taking Plan B or Ella, you need to keep your legs together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what that is.
Oh,
and
you
so,
guys,
yes,
I just have to... I
think that's
rant.
That's lack of respect. That's just lack of respect. How else do you, you know?
I would venture to say Hobby Lobby and Conestoga, I don't think their issue really is so much, I think they're hiding behind the wall of religion.
Mm-hmm.
I think their issue is that they're being dictated to on the type of coverage you need to give your employees. Hobby Lobby specifically is a retailer who is notorious for not giving people 40 hours so that they don't get health care coverage. They've not been the best, they have not done the best by their part-time employees, let alone their full-time employees. And they're a business that doesn't want to participate in the Affordable Care Act. And this is their way of trying to get out of it. I don't think it ever started off as a religious issue for them as much as a political issue. And they don't want to be told how to run their business. So they've thrown up this wall of religion, which as a Christian, I find highly offensive that my faith has been hijacked by people like the folks at Hobby Lobby. I don't think it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wait
a
minute.
That leads to a question for Bob. That leads to a question for Bob, which is, you know, does the corporate person have religious rights? You know, this is only personal. I mean, you said earlier, you know, somebody's personal liberties are going to be stepped on, except we're not dealing person to person. Right? This case is corporation to person. And so it's really, how can a corporation have its religious rights stepped on? Who gave corporations religious rights? Is this valid at all?
The Supreme Court gave them personhood, so.
Well, actually,
right,
they
by extension through
it
Citizens United,
personhood.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is an ugly extension of that.
See, the problem
you agree,
is
Bob?
That, do I agree with what?
Well, that this is an extension of Citizens United.
That's what I said.
Yes, yes. Good.
Yeah, I was the one who said that.
Okay.
Oops.
Yeah.
Are you feeling
yeah.
beat up on? We're not beating up on you. I'm sorry, Bob.
No.
Sorry, Bob.
No, I'm not beat up. I'm just feeling the balls as they're hit off the bat. I mean,
yeah.
You know. And that's part of the complexity of the case, because
yes.
what you're dealing with, let me kind of flowchart it, okay?
Okay.
A corporation has to have one fundamental constitutional right if it has no other, or it cannot exist, and that is freedom of assembly, because a corporation is an assembly of people for a pecuniary purpose. Their religion, if you will, is to make money.
Amen.
I mean, that is their raison d'etre. Their reason for being is to make money. It is the sine qua non, that which without not of all business. Now, if the Supreme Court wants to go and give full constitutional rights to all business owners, okay, the first thing that's going to do is become has become a corporate litigation attorney employment act. Okay, because within every corporation, there are going to be shareholders from the smallest partnership all the way up to whoever has the most shares on float on either the New York Stock Exchange or NASDAQ, where somebody is going to assert a constitutional right based on something they found in the corporate charter that they don't like. It could, in fact, become a new way of going postal. You get tickets to your employer, you buy one share of stock, you say, I am part of the corporate personhood, and therefore, regardless of the shareholder total vote, this particular cell wants to cause a cancer within the company because it doesn't like the operation of the biology.
Well, you know, see, that brings up an interesting point to me because, you know, I'm a retired business owner. I call myself a retired business owner, but my firm was incorporated. I was very clear I didn't own, per se, that company, even though we were closely held. And so you cannot own a corporation. A corporation owns itself. That's why corporations require personhood status, because there is no person to act for them. They have employees like CEOs and CFOs and janitors, for God's sake. But
right,
They own themselves. And so I think here's the point, though, Bob. I think people are collapsing. They are now going beyond personhood. When we talk about this in the various posts I've read and in the various posts I've made and dealt with comments, we're collapsing the distinction corporate personhood and humanity. A human being has certain rights that have never been extended to a corporate person. And so,
Absolutely it has.
Well, okay.
I filed objections on the basis of such things as proprietary secrets and things like that, based on a corporate entity's right to privacy.
Yes, a
corporation should have some of the rights of a person because, as you say, it is a person to the extent that people can act for it on its behalf.
Right.
Okay?
Here's the deal. The person who's upset at Hobby Lobby is not the person corporate. It is a human being who thinks he is personally spending money for something that, frankly, taking those three things out of his policy won't change the cost at all. So this person
let me
is imposing
read,
something. Go ahead.
Let me read from the Third Circuit's argument that the corporation doesn't have religious rights, and this is what the majority remarked. We do not see how a for-profit artificial being, invisible, intangible, and existing only in contemplation of law, that was created to make money, could exercise such an inherently human right. And that's why, at the Third Circuit, Hobby Lobby's case or appeal was denied, in that the lower courts don't see Hobby Lobby as corporate being an individual. And,
right.
And I think this is what the Supreme Court is trying to
wrestle with.
Yes, exactly. I think that's the crux of the point. But if we fly a little bit higher and take a 10,000-foot look at this, that's what the issue is whether a corporation can have the same human rights as a human being. But when we come down and really look at what they've the
by the way, I'm
getting
about. Feedback from you.
Are you getting feedback from me? Let me turn off. Is that better?
No, I'm still getting an echo.
Okay. Are you getting an echo, Janine?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
So, I guess my concern is that, you know, the higher level we can, you know, say whether a corporation is a human being or not or has human rights. But really, how did the case get this far when the thing that they're arguing, this religious right that the corporation wants to have, is not valid? The science is not valid. And that's why I go back to you, Janine, when you brought up that the court cannot qualify or validate the scientific evidence. And I saw nothing in the arguments from the Supreme Court that, you know, argued before the Supreme Court that any of that even came up. That's what's frightening to me.
Oh, you know, you're right. In everything I've read, nobody talked about the science. And you know, it's interesting, too, because, again, this Religious Freedom Restoration Act from 93 was intended to sort of throw a wedge between the truth and the law, so to speak, you know what I'm saying? And so that's,
right.
You know, and so I think it's important to, I don't know, Bob, can they even consider something that wasn't presented in arguments yesterday or Tuesday?
Only by way of research relative to the law. In other words, if they find, they can use whatever they choose to use as long as it's part of the record. They don't just take what was argued orally or in the briefs. That's what a writ of certiorari does. It orders the court below to deliver the record of the case in entirety to the court above.
So if the science were brought up in the lower courts, the Supreme Court would have that at its disposal, because not only do they have the arguments from day
provided
before yesterday.
Provided it was raised on appeal, yes.
So was it?
Yeah, they,
you know,
don't,
I don't,
they don't.
I mean, was
take,
the science questioned during the appeal process?
That I don't know.
Yeah. Hmm.
That I don't know. But there are two other issues that kind of deserve coverage in this chat that I'd like to touch on, if I might. Okay? While we're on the subject of medical rights, okay,
mm-hmm.
people don't even have full medical rights, okay, with regard to their religious beliefs. There have been cases throughout the state court system where an individual was required to undergo a blood transfusion to save their own life over parental objections on religious grounds.
That would have been, there was a case about with Jehovah's Witnesses, I seem
right.
to recall.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm trying to, I've been scratching my head all day trying to remember the name of that case. But there are a number of such cases throughout.
Well, here's
state
a great example
system.
Is in Dallas, the young woman who had the seizure, and she was pregnant and she was on life support, and the state stepped in, right, and said you can't take her off life support because she's carrying a fetus.
Right.
And that's where the state said,
we
don't care what the doctors say.
State interest in this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what is the compelling state interest? Here is where the Supreme Court could find its dodge in one of two places. I'll get to the other one in a moment. But the Supreme Court can look for a compelling state interest on unity of medical care at the federal level by congressional intent. Okay? And that leads to the other one. The other one is interstate commerce. Okay?
Yes.
Congress has, and it's well settled, they have all but, I said plenary in an earlier conversation on Facebook with Janine today, but to be fair, I have to characterize it as all but plenary because of the Second Amendment cases. The Gonzalez case may have altered the fully plenary character of congressional action relative to interstate commerce. Okay? But other than that, there is a line of cases saying, in fact, that Congress's power over interstate commerce is plenary. And I can assure you, plainly and simply, that Hobby Lobby and Conestoga Wood are not acting simply intra-state.
Exactly.
Not acting interstate, intrastate.
No, intrastate.
Intrastate on this particular issue.
As businesses. As businesses.
Oh, as businesses.
As businesses relative to health care provision within their businesses, if that person is acting interstate. Let's presume corporate personhood, despite the fact that there are those who would say a corporation is not a person. Let's give them that, okay? If you are a person engaged in interstate commerce, Congress has the right to regulate and has a compelling interest in the regulation of that interstate commerce. Now, let's move to what happens if we take that out away from the Supreme Court. I can describe it in four words. Welcome back, Jim Crow.
Yes. Yes. And don't you think this is an interesting march on that path? I mean, Citizens United was a step in that direction. McClutchin is McCutcheon is a step in that direction. This is a step in that direction, basically asserting that whoever's got the money should be able to do anything they want with it. And, you know, interstate commerce or law of the land be damned. And
what you've just said is this is a case where the first golden rule comes into conflict with second golden rule.
How so?
So this idea of interstate commerce.
The first golden rule being do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the second golden rule being he who has the gold makes the rules.
Oh. Got it. Actually, in my version of the good book, it said love one another as you love me. It's
right.
Much simpler.
So
I sort of take each other out of it. Go ahead.
So, Bob, I'm interested in your thoughts, or have you read or seen anything that has brought up the idea, because they are interstate and not intrastate, you know, that they do business across state lines, that they are compelled to follow basically the law of the land based on that idea?
We can start with Article 6, Section 2. Yeah, Article 6, Section 2 of the Constitution, otherwise known as the Supremacy Clause.
But have you seen
federal
that
law
though?
Prevails, and Congress and the presidency have spoken on the issue with an expressed desire to regulate interstate commerce with respect to states' rights, which is why states were given the option of opting out.
But I guess my question is, does that, well, I guess it would apply to this. And I don't know that I have read any of the arguments that have referenced that, which I find very, you know, a very interesting and probably more compelling argument to do away with, you know, this request that they are allowed to not participate in portions of the ACA. And I've not heard or read that anybody has brought that up, but then again, I haven't read most of the lower court stuff. But I find that very interesting.
Congress has the authority to grant exemptions. The president can grant exemptions within the executive branch.
Right.
Just his own say-so. Okay? But Congress and the president together can grant exemptions to whatever the heck they want to as part of the law. This law does not apply, and the only thing that stands in their way to that is an equal protection argument opposed to that position, because anybody exempted is being treated differently and therefore unequally with those who don't have the exemption.
And this case is about exemption. It's not about changing the law. It's being exempted from certain pieces of it. And so the equal protection issue that I see over and over again in the pages and on the blogs and even in the mainstream media is basically people want to pit, you know, Mr. and Mrs. Green as people and majority shareholders of Hobby Lobby against you, Anne, or you, Kathleen, as though the question about equal protection is pointed at them. We are being discriminated against because we own a company. And I come back to, they don't own that company. That company owns itself. The corporation owns itself. And is there equal protection under the law when it's a human being and a corporation? Is that even a conversation?
Well,
yes,
and
it is.
And that's what this—that's what is being decided. Because if you read what the lower courts have said, that is the crux of their issue. I mean, and that's exactly right, Janine. In that the lower courts have said a corporation, although can be looked at as an individual, that does not give them the same human rights, that is an intangible idea, you know, that they are individuals when in fact it's really a corporation. And I feel like that is the crux of the argument here, whether we believe that it's okay for them to declare religion is the issue. They could have said it was something other than religion was the issue. That's why I have felt all along religion really was not the reason. I think that they feel like they're individuals, and as individuals, they think they can do whatever they want to do with that company and discriminate however they choose to discriminate with that company.
I think that is
the crux of the argument before the Supreme Court.
As a smoker, my personal belief is if a business wants to allow smoking, the state should not have the right to say they can't do it. But the law doesn't fit my fact scenario on this one. Okay? Because number one, as Janine pointed out again in our pre-interview, there is a distinction between a privately owned company and a publicly held company. And
Hobby Lobby
is
privately owned.
Right. I understand that.
It's called closely held. It's called closely held.
Closely held. Okay.
All right. Yeah.
It's called closely held.
But what I'm saying is if if you're talking about Joe's Diner down the street that has one guy that bought it all and is deciding who comes into his business, as long as he is not violating federal law by discriminating against this or that group, or state law by discriminating against this or that group, then he can do whatever he wants with his business.
So is that another part of the argument then? Is that the Supreme Court?
What the issue here is trying to become exempt to portions of the law that if a person has full rights over their business, the Supreme Court has said these are compelling state interests that cannot be crossed even if you otherwise have full liberty to do with your business for the purpose of making money, whatever the hell you damn well please.
I want to insert one thing right here really quickly. We're short on time, but there was one piece I hoped we would talk about. Let's go back to this Religious Freedom Restoration Act in 1993 that says, I think the quote is, set strict scrutiny standards for any law that substantially burdens a person's exercise of religion. And so the interesting thing about this is, if it became the court's job, right, to evaluate the tenets of a faith as a part of this process, which is what Hobby Lobby is asking that they do, right? So if the court is in a position to have to evaluate the tenets of faith and see, is it or is it not central, and is it or is it not valid, not only would we have to consider the quality of the science they use to make their determination, but then we'd also look at other corporate behavior to see whether or not it was central. And the corporate behavior that gets pointed out time after time, and I was glad when other people picked up this ball and ran with it, I've been doing this for months, is that Hobby Lobby does extensive business with China.
Yes.
In other words, almost everything they sell in their store came from China. China has the world's highest rate, not just because of the number of people. We're talking rate, the highest rate of abortion and the highest rate of infanticide, killing children after they're born, you know, and it's a part of their political
and
economic
strategy. And let's just say
strategy.
That the abortion in China is sanctioned by the state and paid for by the state.
And frankly, required.
You
have a one-child limit. And so here's a company who dares to make its fortune on products made in a country where probably almost no worker other than children workers have not had an abortion, right? They're telling us that the wives of their employees or the women employees should not use any particular kind of birth control. See, I can't understand how a court would look at this if they even thought it was their job to evaluate the validity of this religious position and not just throw it out the window, because they do nothing in their business life. And you can't say in the case of I buy from China and that's just business and not look at your employees and say that's just business.
They're differentiating and trying to apply two different sets of rules to themselves to give them whatever they think their advantage is. So in one case, we're going to turn our back and not pay attention to our suppliers. Although that's a central role in our business and how we make money, we're going to ignore what our suppliers do and how our suppliers treat their employees or the country that they come from. But at the same time, when it comes to the people who work for us, we are now going to say, but we're going to ignore what we do in practice and now put a special set of rules in here because for whatever reason it goes against their religious beliefs. And I'm still struggling with that because anywhere in the Christian faith does it say women can't use birth control?
The way to deal with that, I think, is to differentiate the Greens from Hobby Lobby. Okay?
Okay.
Well, that's
what you're,
right. I mean, so, yeah.
What needs to occur is the Greens need to be identified as sentient beings. The corporation needs to be identified as a non-sentient being, which, by common law, has been granted certain constitutional rights. Among those cannot be religion, because as I read on a blog post on Facebook, I think it was at Join the Coffee Party, in reply to something Janine posted, corporations have no more religion than rocks do.
Exactly. Exactly.
I thought that was a stunning commentary.
Well, even a pet rock doesn't have those rights.
Well, I mean, let's examine something here. Okay, when you're saying that, the converse is also true. Corporations have no more enlightened self-interest, if you will, in the theory of evolution than rocks do. I mean, that one works both ways. And if it works both with...
But you know they don't believe in evolution either.
Well,
the corporation actually doesn't believe in anything.
A corporation believes in one thing. If we get it done, we make money. Boom. Done.
You know,
end
I think the
belief
most
system.
The most profound thing you said today, Bob, I put it out here on the chat, was that a corporation's religion is to make money. That a corporation, and you've reiterated that again in this last commentary, in that a corporation in and of itself is non-sentient, so how can it have a religion?
Right.
Even if we go with the idea that the corporation is an individual, it's a non-sentient individual, so how could a corporation have a faith-based religion, and separating the Greens from the corporation, if that could happen, would be the way to argue that Hobby Lobby has to provide this type of coverage for all their employees. Because,
the counter-argument to that, and I'm just playing devil's advocate
here,
is the comatose pregnant patient. Okay? If they are comatose or dead, if they are dead and that fetus is alive, okay, you don't have the ability, if they're dead, to engage in that which would endanger the life of the fetus. In other words, if you use paddles on the patient, it could very well kill the fetus. The first
I don't think that's ubiquitously true. I think it's a point of law that we like to argue, but the truth is, if you're a poor woman, they're going to do anything they want to you. If you're in certain states, they're not even going to treat you. They're going to let you both die. It's like it becomes one of those, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, and some very expensive lawyer is going to fight that in some very expensive court for some people with a lot of money or who can gather money from others to make a point. But, you know, functionally speaking, that just isn't true. But I agree with what you're saying, Bob, that in the letter of the law, you have the deceased versus the living conversation. That is always possible. But, you know, here's another thing that kind of irks me, and it's in the same kind of direction. The Greens are setting themselves separate from their corporation. However, they're not coming out from behind the shield of their corporation. And so
exactly.
they're peeking through the shield, because I would actually say a corporation has two jobs. One, make money. That's maybe its religion, but its job is to limit liability to shareholders. So
yes,
if Hobby Lobby breaks the law, no shareholder goes to jail. If the guy down at the bodega on the corner breaks the law, he goes to jail. And so these guys have, like, drilled a little hole through the corporate shield. They're peeking out, you know, like little snipers. And they're saying, oh, but we actually have an opinion, and this hurts my feelings. And somehow, and I know it's just because they have the money to do it, we actually have to humor that conversation. And that's what annoys me.
Well, and it's been humored all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yes, because they can. Now, do they have a case? Yes. Do we hope this case goes the right way? You bet. But I promise you, if you had this issue, Ann, or if I had this issue, Kathleen, you had this issue, Bob, you had an issue, we would not get there.
Exactly.
It's because of the second golden rule.
Yes.
Right.
Yes,
they have the money
genius.
For the attorneys.
My genius friend, you are exactly right. And guess what? It's tax deductible. It's a tax deductible corporate expense. And so, just like health insurance is, I promise you, the policy for these women who want to be, they want to deny, I'll give you A through Z or A through Q, but X, Y, Z you don't get, right?
Right.
That policy, there'll be no difference in the price at all. Actuarially, it will round off to zero. And so,
right.
Why couldn't the, you know, even if they're allowed to do this, I think employees should be able to pay $1 per year for the extra coverage. And then their feelings won't be hurt. Do they not care that they're hurting other people's feelings? Do they not get that they're imposing their religion? You bet they do. You bet they do.
You think they do care, or you think they don't care?
Because they can.
That's an interesting point, and we may have to go another show on this. Because you just opened up the Establishment Clause.
Yes. Yes, I did. So,
yes, she went there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And exactly. We have a grand total of 3 minutes to dissect that. Good luck.
Well, I'll tell you what, in all fairness to everyone, what we'll do is go play Dissection on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page. I can run just a couple minutes over to close the show. But don't you think, here's the one question I'm going to have in closing.
Personally, I think we ought to go another show on this. I mean,
okay.
It is that big. I mean, that's my personal thought.
Same time next week.
I mean, whether I can make it or not is irrelevant. The discussion in full needs to be had. You opened establishment, and I'm thinking strict scrutiny standards.
Yes. Yes.
Neither
so,
of which can be fully explored in the next 2 minutes.
Well, thank you, and I'm not going to have this show without you, Bob, so we'll chat offline about when you can be there, and I hope you will come back for this show as well.
Absolutely.
We'll see you in our schedules. Kathleen,
it has been,
thank you.
It's been amazing having Bob give more of a legal perspective, because as I told Janine earlier, I get so caught up in the emotional aspect because I feel so discriminated against. And Bob, having not the other side, or the fact that you do play devil's advocate to help us really think through these things, because it really helps me feel like I've got ammunition. And that has been extremely helpful.
See, that's the thing that I learned when I studied to be a paralegal, is how to argue both sides of any issue so that I could develop counterarguments to the arguments that would be brought forth by the other side. And most
Brilliant.
People don't have their head trained that way.
Right.
That may
be
a blessing for everybody,
that's
but we who engage in the law.
Excellent. Kathleen, I hope you'll be here next week when we talk. When we go into phase two of this conversation. And I have just a couple of quick announcements as we close. Coffee Party USA is a totally crowd-funded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. To become a voting member or to donate, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. One of the things you're going to find on that website is a little tab called Radio Shows. Lunch with Loudon has enjoyed your company today, but there are others. Sundays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style with Bud Fields. Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson. Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, here you are, you guys, 12 noon Pacific, Lunch with Loudon. Can't wait to see you here next week. Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific, Politics and Right with Egberto Willis. Thank you. Thank you for everyone who is on this conversation today. I can't tell you how much I value your opinion. Coffee Party on.